Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy's giving me the Food & Wine Pairing 101 quiz today.
And we're at meatloaf now, so...
The most exciting moment.
I do not like meatloaf, so I can't even give you a recipe for meatloaf.
It's one of those things that I've almost never seen on the table with a glass of wine.
Right.
That, you know, you,
I mean,
it's
maybe
one
you
of
drink
those, like,
beer with meatloaf? I don't know.
That sounds like the heaviest
maybe have a glass
and
of
hardest
milk.
To digest. Yeah.
Oh,
my gosh.
Water.
Have seven,
all right, so
have
we'll,
meatloaf
we
and seven biscuits
meatloaf?
And a glass of beer.
Okay. You don't get to drink
no,
anything
honestly,
when you're
eating
meatloaf.
I think you do need something to cut it. And honestly, maybe the best thing in the whole world would be Beaujolais.
All right.
Alcohol is a little bit lower. The fruit is really bright. It has a little bit of bitter tannin to it. It actually cleans up. Beaujolais has great purpose. It is not a giant piece of money. I can recall flying to France and getting there and having to wait hours and hours for a train and walking into Pied de Cochon at 8 o'clock in the morning, having steak with a fried egg on top of it and being very happy that they had a good glass of Beaujolais so I could sleep on that train.
I remember that too.
And it worked really successfully.
Yes, it did.
Both for the sleep as well as digestion. Yeah,
everyone did very well with that Beaujolais that morning at 6 a.m. or whatever crazy time it was. Yeah, au Pied de Cochon at 6 a.m. or 5:30 in the morning is a pretty entertaining
it's an
neighborhood
interesting crowd.
To be in.
An interesting crowd. Highly recommend
Ooh.
It for the people watching.
Right. Okay, so then how about some Mexican cooking, maybe tacos or burritos or quesadillas or...
There's a reason people drink beer with a lot of Mexican food, and it's because of the spice. If you want to drink wine with it, honestly, sparkling wine that's a little bit sweet would do pretty well. The bubbles are helpful. Cava is an easy and inexpensive way to get that done.
That sounds great.
Rosé that's pretty fruity, rosé from the south of Italy or Rioja rosé could get that done. If you're like, I drink red wine because that's what I do. Then the red wine, again, it's probably something relatively fruity but lower alcohol. And it's going to sound weird, but I would probably drink Beaujolais from a riper vintage like 2011 with that if I had to have a glass of red wine with Mexican food that wasn't crazy spicy.
All right. And then all-American favorite, barbecue. And we have a great barbecue house here in Baltimore, Andy Nelson. So let's just go with his because it's so good. Talk about anything else?
That's a sweet and salty story right there.
Mm-hmm. And good smoke. I mean, they get
absolutely.
Good smoke into their
absolutely.
Barbecue.
I've not drunk a lot. I've eaten a lot of Andy Nelson's. I've not drunk an awful lot of wine with it. The things I have liked the best... young, big, rich Chianti Classico with a bunch of oak on it, like from Isla Elena or Fontori. Those are successful with it. I also, like I mentioned, Primitivo before. I like Primitivo with that very much. It's big, fruity, you know, Zin, but not quite the alcohol from the south of Italy. Big California Zinfandel, successful with that too. My little geeky choice would be Lambrusco. The Lambrusco, that red wine that's like sparkling and a little bit sweet and lower alcohol, like 8%. That traditionally you sit in like in a tavern in Modena and have it with Parma ham and Parmigiano. When you think about like the sweet and salty and fatty stuff, it's a total natural. It actually makes sense historically. And yes, I have done that. And yes, I drank an entire bottle of Lambrusco with the barbecue and it was wonderful.
There you go. So firsthand information and knowledge.
There's a lot of lousy Lambrusco, a great producer to look out for, Cecci, C-E-C-C-I.
Very good. All right, so that's I think that's it for the ideas for pairings.
I hope I made it through the quiz.
I think you did really well. That was really fascinating.
With us today on our Food & Wine Pairing program, we have Elisa Scavino from Paolo Scavino in Barolo. How are you, Elisa?
Hi, Tony. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
I'm pretty well. I just got back from a long trip in Asia, and I'm glad to be back, even if I enjoyed, I had a very good time.
Well, that's excellent. I've had an interesting thought, because I know you were traveling in Asia, and all of this program we've been talking about pairing food and wine. And, well, I guess the first thing we should do is ask you, could you take 2 or 3 minutes and explain what wines you all make? The style of winemaking, where in Italy, all of that sort of business. And we'll sort of set the table for the questions then.
Absolutely. Paolo Scavino is my family winery, and we are in Italy, in the region called Piemonte, in the northwest of Italy, at the border with France and Swiss. And we are in a small area that is called the Barolo area, where Barolo wine is made from Nebbiolo grapes. So we work with our indigenous grape of Piemonte, which are Dolcetto, Barbera, and Nebbiolo mainly. And it's a small family estate, so we have 23 hectares in six communes of the 11 in the Barolo region. So we are pretty fragmented, but also we have the chance to show the difference of terroir from each vineyard. Yes, it's we started in 1921, so 90 and more years ago, and it's a family business since four generations. So we vinify our own grapes, and we take care of all our all the steps. So from, of course, the vineyards to the production, and also the communication.
So let me start with the wines that you all make, the traditional wines for drinking every day, Dolcetto and Barbera. If you're in Piemonte, what would you drink Dolcetto with? What dishes would be a classic dish that you would drink Dolcetto with?
Dolcetto is the everyday wine for our region. So it's probably the most popular wine. So every family has it on the table for lunch, dinner. It's a wine made by Dolcetto grapes, 100%, and it's normally vinified in stainless steel to preserve the freshness, the aromatics, and is a wine that has a pretty light structure, bright structure. The acidity is mild. There are a little bit of tannin, but more pretty delicate. And it's a wine that normally we start the meal with. So we normally pair with a typical antipasti from Piemonte, like the carne cruda, which is beef tartare, I guess, in English, and which is typical of Piemonte. And then with the vitello tonnato, which is tuna vino, the rusa, so it's also vegetarian dishes and salad because it's pretty light and aromatic.
And so you just came back from Asia. So when you're doing a wine tasting event, say in Hong Kong, what is the dish that Dolcetto is put down with?
Well, one of the very, very interesting pairing I had with Dolcetto was in Tokyo, and it was with sea bream with orata, and it was cooked with a cream of peas and squid also. So it was very interesting because normally people we think that fish goes mostly with white wines, but it was actually a beautiful match also with fish, the Dolcetto, because it's pretty floral and needs maybe fish that probably have a little bit of texture but it was very, very interesting.
It has to be fish that has enough oil content for the bit of tannin that Dolcetto has. So could you do the same thing for us for Barbera and for Barolo? Talk about a Piemontese use for Barbera and an Asian use for Barbera, and same thing for Barolo?
Yes. So Barbera is a wine that is made, it's a monovarietal, is made with Barbera grapes. Barbera in Piemonte is also a grape that is pretty much diffused, not just in the Barolo region, but also in the Monferrato, in the Asti area. So gives wine that has also different structure, different slightly different profile. The Barbera d'Alba is a pretty fine Barbera, so Barbera has very good acidity, very fresh, refreshing acidity, and the structure is softer and is more juicy, more velvety. So the tannin are almost unperceptible in Barbera. So it's pretty full, pretty feminine. Barbera, it's a wine that we generally pair with the aperitif, with the salumi, like with the prosciutto crudo di Parma, with prosciutto cotto, with different salami. We pair Barbera also generally after the antipasto. We start the meal with the pasta, and generally Barbera is very, very interesting with the pasta, with ragu or with mushrooms, so egg pasta. So yes, generally is the wine that follows the dolcetto in a meal.
Yeah, I have great affection for the classic Piemontese pasta, the classic tagliarini. I love with great Barbera.
Yes, it's simple, but it gives a great great pleasure.
And so Barolo, the king of Piemontese wines, for many people the king of Italian wines,
yeah.
That usually you have that with secondo, right, with some kind of a rich meat course.
Yes, so Barolo is it's a wine that is made just in our region in Piemonte, and is made 100% by Nebbiolo grapes. It's a beautiful grape, very noble. It's a late ripening grape, Nebbiolo. In fact, the name of the grape recalled the nebbia, which is the fog, because we normally harvest Nebbiolo when it's very pretty late in the fall, middle of October, even end of October, when the fog season starts. It's a grape that requires more time to ripe because it has a particularly richness in polyphenols, which are both aromatics, but also tannins and anthocyanin, the molecule that gives the color to Nebbiolo. Nebbiolo has also more delicate color than Barbera and Dolcetto, which are more purple, more intense than in the color. Nebbiolo has a very complex aromatic, not just primary perfumes, fruit perfume like red berries, cherry, strawberry, but also more, secondary and tertiary perfumes, more earthy and more licorice, fennel, violet, roses. It's a pretty complex profile aromatic, and the structure has good acidity and good tannin. It's a wine that has a long aging performance, and generally you can drink it young, but also you can age it for very long time. So generally, Nebbiolo we match with in Piemonte typically with the meat, because the meat has protein and Nebbiolo has tannin, and tannin, on a chemical point of view, has a negative charge, and the protein has a positive charge. And when they meet, they kind of neutralize each other, and they perfectly melt in the mouth. No?
So chemically speaking, they balance. That's the classic match. What happens when you apply Barolo? And we have just a short amount of time. What happens when you apply Barolo to Asian cooking? How do you use it?
Yeah, well, Nebbiolo is a little bit more particular for matching. So still, even in Asia, is particularly matched with meat and so lamb. Like the Peking duck, I think it's interesting with Nebbiolo. It's not very easy though with spicy Nebbiolo because the spice. Underline more the tannin, so it becomes a little bit more aggressive. So still it needs a more delicate dish, also very good raw material, but also very delicate dish that don't overwhelm the wine. So even some shellfish, I think, is I had Barolo with a more old Barolo vintage, but it was very nice with like lobster, even crab. Then, of course, a beautiful match for Nebbiolo, which is more a fall time match, is egg and white truffle. With the Nebbiolo, I think, is one of the most beautiful dish that underline the elegance of this grape and the delicacy also.
Well, thanks for coming on with us, Aliza. Thought it might be sort of fascinating to have to go from really classical matches to really unusual matches, and I think you have a special understanding of how things actually work together because you've had to deal with such diverse pairings.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's a great pleasure, and thank you for giving me this chance to talk with you.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk with you.
Well, interesting to talk to Aliza, especially right after she's traveled.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, one very different from, obviously, Italian cooking.
Well, and especially the style of cooking in Piemonte, mm-hmm. The menus are almost the same from one restaurant to the next. It's just a matter of the quality of the cook or the peculiarities of the house.
Yeah.
To go to something as diverse as Malaysia or China or Japan and take these classical wines mm-hmm. and figure out how to get them to show their characteristics is remarkable.
Yeah, because, you know, as we think a winemaker is thinking about the food from their own region probably quite a bit when they're producing and blending and doing whatever they're doing to produce their wine. So,
cooking,
it's a big world out there.
Pairing like cooking, winemaking, it's all just thoughtfulness.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Have a great week.